Hello, everybody. Welcome to Chat of the Wild.
Gaiden.
In this season, we are playing through Oceanhorn 2, Knights of the Lost Realm. In our last episode, we faced our fears and we swam around in dark, murky water.
Ugh.
And we maybe came across a giant mech that I guess, like, we need to just throw that out there really quick. That is Oceanhorn that is circling around there. Brian and I mentioned it in, like, we skirted around it in the last episode
because
we wanted to avoid talking about as much as we could in terms of, like, what is hiding underneath this dark water.
It's kind of like what I thought was down there, but then again, you know, just my...
Oceanhorn is down there, and then there's a giant fish down there as well. So it's like...
Okay, so I didn't come across the giant fish. I only saw the mech.
I mean, it doesn't matter what's down there. My brain can put anything down there. I think I said in the episode, like, Delago could be down there for all I know. Like, Resident Evil 4 enemies could be down there for all I care. Like, I just don't want to think about it. I don't want to be there. It's a position I don't want to be in.
I did get in Oceanhorn's way, and it just immediately vaporizes you.
Oh!
If you get hit by it, you're just, like, dead immediately.
Yes.
It's funny.
That happened to me in this episode. We'll get to it.
So what we really needed to do, if you remember, we killed some crystals. For some reason, they were there. They were quote-unquote sentient.
They were alive.
I don't know why. They were alive. We killed them. We took that away from them. And then that opened up a gate underneath the water where we could get into Uthica. That's the pronunciation I'm going with, and I don't want to talk about that pronunciation anymore. We will talk about other pronunciations later.
We get more.
We got pronunciations to talk about.
Mm.
So we get in this temple, and I don't know. It's very much like every other temple. The theming is different this time. We do a lot of swimming underwater. I'm kind of disappointed with the lack of puzzles in this game, if I'm being honest. Like, even there's not even enough, like, I think, button puzzles. Like, the first game had a lot of that. Even, it's weird. I'm missing the old pushing the block puzzles first game.
Those.
I had this thought, too, is because the puzzles, I don't like the puzzles they even do have in here. Like, for the Switch puzzles, at least they have established those in a way that, like, they introduce them. They're like, hey, here's going to be Switches. When you see them, you should think to interact with them and look for what it's changed. But there's puzzles in here where they're not introduced, and it leads to when I was talking before about how long I've spent in this game, as long as you, Jeremy, and I don't have a bunch of the completion stuff you have, because I will sit in a room for like 30 minutes going, what do they want me to do? They're introducing an idea right now, and I don't understand, like, what I'm supposed to do with this idea. So I have to sit there and, like, try and figure it out. And it's really annoying.
Did you guys... okay, so I know you probably did, but did you actually pay attention? When we get in this dungeon, Trin and Jin will not shut up. Like, they just unloaded so much lore about... Apparently, this is the origin point of all the Gil people. Like, this is where the Gil folk... evolved from. Like, this is their primordial ooze, their birthing place.
Yeah, they call it like
but
the
they
birth
kept
chamber.
Talking
but I think that's kind of that's the same thing that Iron Talon said of the last beacon. Like, that's the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
Like, the beacons are
okay,
the forge from which all the races were born. So
I wasn't upset by it because they wouldn't stop talking. Actually, as soon as I got in, I was like, okay, I need you guys to start talking, because what are we doing? What are we here doing? And
see, for me,
and then they started talking, and they didn't talk about what I wanted to hear. They dropping lore.
For me, it was when you're trying to find a parking spot and you turn down the volume of your music.
Yeah.
But like, you couldn't turn them down. And so I'm trying to take this. It was a sensory overload thing for me, where I'm like, they're talking. It actually sounds like it might be like important lore information that I'm hearing right now. If I care about hearing those things, you know, in general, the stuff they say doesn't matter because you get in this dungeon and you do the same things that you've done in the dungeons.
Mm-hmm. I had another problem where last week I got into the dungeon. If you remember, we had to swim in, swim back up, and open a door to let our party in. And then I stopped the game. And so I forgot about the swimming in and letting them in. And so now I've started at the top, and I think that the chamber that we're in is filled with water, and I see a computer down there underwater, and I'm like, okay, we have to drain this somehow to get to that computer, blah, 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 blah. None of that is a thing. But I forgot the process I went through to get to this point, and so I was stuck in there for a little bit. That computer doesn't do anything, by the way. We completely skip past it.
No, that computer is what raised the water initially.
It raises and lowers the water level.
Oh, or,
well, no, just lowers the water level. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that is not going to be... We bring this up. Don't think that that's going to be an important part of this dungeon. It's not. I think it happens one other time.
Yeah.
It's not a theming for this at all.
There is the no theming water is, level.
No, we clear out this water level to make it a regular dungeon.
Yeah.
And we get into there and we're tasked with the same thing as before, where we got to find the three gold spheres and bring them to their spot to open up the gate that we need to go to. This one had, so it was complicated in a way because I didn't understand the mechanics of it. One of the spheres is in the vents above you.
There's two that are actually in.
There's
vents.
Two that you have to do that. Yes.
But and you have to crawl through the air ducts for one of them.
Right. And so what you have to do with these two is shoot them. We've never had to shoot anything
yes.
to interact with the physics of them.
That's how I got them.
You only had to shoot one.
Yeah.
No, there were two.
Well, I grabbed the other
I
one.
Had to grabbed. How did
I,
you grab
I went and grabbed the first one, the one where you jump up into the air ducts. I think there was a switch that was a misdirection switch, like, and then a real one, and I just grabbed it.
Okay, so for that one, what I did is I hit the switch to turn the air ducts to go one way. Mm-hmm. Then I crawled into the air ducts and in first person crawling mode, shot the ball down it in order for it to hit the wind that's pushing through there.
Okay,
and then it fell out of that.
That might have been what they wanted you to do.
I just walked up there and pushed it out of the push.
But there was a grate in front of it.
No, there's a hole in front of it.
Yeah. You just drop down the hole.
Yeah.
And the grate probably gets moved by one of the switches because there's a couple of them.
So one.
And it turns the air off or something.
Yeah, there's one switch that changes.
We all do it differently. Yeah,
we all do it differently.
You can walk up there and just push it through an opening.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because you can grab things in first person, which is funny to me. Like when you're underwater.
You can do everything else in first person.
You can grab stuff.
Odd.
I prefer being in first person. I don't have to like deal with my awkward model, so that's fine.
The other one, though, you do have to shoot, and it sends it down this way through a vent, and then it appears in a different
spot.
I was so mad.
I was like, that's it. I tried to jump to it. I was like, well, I don't know what you want from me. And just shoot it. Just shoot it.
I figured it out pretty quickly, but I was not happy about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I tried to jump. It's like, oh, I can't reach it. I guess I'll shoot it. Can I shoot these things? I can throw them, so I guess I can shoot them.
Right. It's like in the first one, when we threw a ball, it would have been nice if there was a puzzle where you had to throw something over a fence that you could see through to something over there that would activate something else to be like, hey, just so you know, you should be thinking about throwing stuff in this for later. But they don't introduce these things. They don't introduce these ideas. They just go, oh, that's a cool idea, and they implement it.
Yeah. The third one, you have to lower some water. That's the thing. You swim up to an area, you turn the water off, and then you can carry the ball back. Mm-hmm. It's like the furthest one away, I believe.
Yeah.
But yeah, you just carry that thing all the way back. You have to chuck it up a level that is way above you. And the whole time I was nervous. I was like, is it going to fade away?
Again?
Like, am I have to get up there? It probably will. If you let it sit there long enough, it probably will fade away. So we get all of those orbs put into there. That opens up the area for us. And this basically just like leads us into the boss. Like that was it. When we were talking about the scheduling out these episodes, I was thinking like at a point where I'm like, okay, that the reef that we were on before this, that's the dungeon. And in a way it kind of is like, because this part is so short at the end, but I guess it's really all depends on your definition of what a dungeon is, right?
Right. I mean, this is the it would be the overworld section where, you know, you dance with the Gorons and play Goron baseball and do all that stuff to get to the dungeon.
Yeah. This leads us into Yrmala.
Yrmala.
This was okay. So I love him very much. I think he's adorable.
He's an adorable baby boy.
I felt so guilty fighting him. This is a giant turtle that shoots poison and has like, it wasn't really part of it, but it looks like it has a lava belly.
Yeah, he like breathes poison at you and shoots like these fire orbs out of his back cannons.
He also just steps on your teammates, kills them instantly.
Yeah.
This was another...
Finish the fight, BC.
In this battle, there are two levels. You have sort of the floor area that Yrmala is walking around on. Then there's a ring above it that has like a hook that you can grapple onto.
Mm-hmm.
So I immediately am just like, well, I'm going to spend all my time up here, obviously.
For the most part, yeah.
Because this giant turtle can't reach me up here. So I didn't see... my teammates did nothing, which is, I could say that for a lot of situations for them.
Trin throws you ammo, but that's about it for me.
Sure, yeah. But in order to hurt Yrmala, you have to do this thing that it does this cute thing, or if you stand there, it hops up like a dog trying to get up on a counter to see, like, what are you doing up there? And I thought it was so adorable. I didn't even care that he was poisoning us.
Yeah.
I never actually got close enough to the poison to get hit.
I did the first time, and then I was like, okay, this is how he attacks up here.
I don't know what the poison does other than hurt you. Maybe an extended amount of hurt, but yeah.
This section has one of my favorite collectibles that we've seen so far, which, like, because you essentially need your gun for this. If you walk around on the floor, there's little shining replenishing spots that will give you ammo. And one's called, like, I forget if it's Tiny Warhead or Old Warhead or something. It's like you pick up part of a missile and it gives you like 7 bullets. It's so
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it was going crazy with like refilling me. It was actually, I'm like, did I do something to this gun? Did I upgrade it? Because I do have like charge. I've been trying to put on all my guns charge all the way up. Because that does let you, I believe, well.
Yeah, charge will just make it quicker to redo, to load your gun back up, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I just had the realization as we were talking. I'm like, nope, that's not what that was. This was a specific ammo that gave you a whole bunch.
Right, which would have been nice if I had known that. I was gathering ammo up top because I'm curious to know how you guys beat up your Minilia.
Okay, so, yeah. What you have to do is when Yrmala jumps up on there, you need to go around the side and use your electric to tether the little spark thing that it has on its back with the spark thing that's up on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And that will get it to like be stunned and fall backwards.
Yeah.
But then that leaves
while
him
he's
open
doing
to
his
attack.
Little countertop dog thing.
Yes. And that leaves him open to attack, but it's like, I don't know, BC, how did you damage him at this point?
So there were two things I did, and we can talk about it later, but before I actually started this dungeon, I went back and collected a bunch of, just like a bunch of items and shards and things, because I was worried about whether or not we were going to get, you know, railroaded into the end game after we completed this.
Sure.
And so I had a lot of charge shards on my gun, and also I threw a super strong attack shard and a charge shard on my fire spell. So I basically, he has these, like, the things we've seen before, which are like these like cysts or whatever that are like the weak point, like these weird boil looking things. And so you have to hit those, but they're too high off the ground to hit with your sword. So you've
got like one you can reach
with
your sword.
Yeah, you got to hit them with either your gun or fire. And I found does a lot of damage because you can hit him with fire. It stays and does like area of effect damage for a while.
Exactly.
And then, so I hit him like every time I would shoot a fire spell, let that burn him, and then switch to my gun and just shoot him.
Okay. So we all basically came to the same conclusion on this.
Yeah, I use my gun. I charred my sword. I would use fire, and then while fire was going, switch over to regular bullets and then just shoot mm-hmm. the bullets. It didn't feel efficient in any no. way. But it got the job done.
No, I tried to use my bomb.
Had no luck.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah, I was about to say I tried throwing a bomb at it because they would just in the first game would immediately explode on contact.
Yeah.
In this game, they
bring that up.
You can't even cook your bombs in this one. You can't even hold them until the last second and try and get a well timed throw to where it explodes on when it reaches him.
I do love when we get these scenarios where you have the high ground over a couple enemies and you can throw a bomb down there and they will look at it and just be like, you'll see like question marks over their head and just be like, what is this thing?
Oh, I've,
and then it blows up and I'm like, that's just fun.
I had some awesome moments with that later in this episode where I took out an entire room in one shot with a bomb and it was really great.
So let's go ahead and wrap up Yermala. We do all that.
You can also hurt him while he's just walking around. If he's on the ground. Yeah, because I don't know, maybe you have to flip him on his side at least once to get the malignant whatever to show up. But after that point, they're just kind of on his tum-tum, and you can get down and shoot him. You got to be really careful, though, because if you get anywhere near his tummy, he will vaporize you, much like Oceanhorn did, and you'll have to restart the fight over. So that's another final dungeon boss that I've had to restart the damn fight in the middle of.
So we're going to take a break right here. When we get back, we'll see what happens now that we defeated Yermala.
Come on in. What can I get you? Sure, I've heard of Hair of the Dogcast. They're that podcast about video games and beer. From the latest gaming headlines to diving deep into the games of yesterday to sampling and reviewing craft beer from all over the world, Hair of the Dogcast is here for the gamer and beer lover in all of us. Available weekly on the Greenlit Podcast Network.
Hello, my name is Jonathan Dunn, and I'm inviting you to listen to Our 3 Cents, a weekly podcast where myself and two of my very best gaming chums are counting down our top 100 favourite video games of all time. For all the episodes and information, check out our website, www.our3cents.co.uk.
Okay, so we are back. We defeated Yermala. We come out to the top of Uthaka, and then Princess Finn is just like, let's go ahead and put this back. Everything's at peace. Steel Scale comes up and goes, my bad. And then we move on.
I love you. You're cool. I was like, I wish I would have known that you were going to help us. And I was like, I told you. Not only
we
did
tried to explain it to you.
Yeah. We said, we'll kill these sentient crystals for you. But I know you don't like that idea. So we'll also kill the turtle. Up front, we said that. Also, there's a plaque outside. It's like one of those tourist plaques that said that there is a city. That city that they talk about in the first game is still down there. They reference it, and we just can't see it. They'll never let us see it.
This is where I only know now that we were basically prompted by Mayfair, old dad, that this might be a point of no return, or at the very least, there's going to be a lot that goes on that we're not going to be able to freely explore. But he doesn't word it in that way.
No, and this is why he is not over by Yellowbird, by our ship. He's kind of got like a picnic going. He's got like a bottle of wine and a book, and he's just kind of sitting on a blanket, like waiting for us. Because he's like, let's go, let's get out of here. And I'm like, all right. And I went to the ship, and he wasn't there. And I'm like, where are you, Dad? Where are you? But yeah, he's off over, like, just kind of hanging out.
Well, I had partially known because I talked to the two of you, because I saw, like, Oceanhorn underneath the water, and I was like, why is there a giant mech here? Because there's mm-hmm. no reference to Oceanhorn being there before.
They never bring it up.
But
it's really hard to gauge how important these scenes will be, you know, like you say, okay, now in retrospect, I'm like, yeah, we had Oceanhorn, the titular beast here with us, ready to go. of course something big is going to happen here, but I was just like, maybe this is just where they keep Ocean Horn.
Or maybe like, it's just some other kind of submersible that Archimedes made, and it's just kind of hanging out around here. Maybe it's not Ocean Horn, you know? Also, why weren't we using Ocean Horn to kill those stupid crystals?
Because they're tiny. They're tiny compared to it. But so what happens is when we tell old dad that we're ready to go, uh-oh, bad guys are here.
The Armada shows up. We've got a Death Star. We've got Star Destroyers. Ocean Destroyers. Excuse me, Ocean Destroyers.
Before that, we have one important scene and one comical scene, just in light of everything, is that one, Steel Scale apologizes, and he's like, hey, should have had your back on this.
Yeah.
You have my axe in the future, you know, when we have to fight against the Dark Army. And then two, Jin is basically like, oh, I'm so happy to see you guys, blossom into new adventures. And
yeah,
which I feel like is a normal phrase to say, you know, young people blossoming into their future selves. But then Trin is like, what do you mean blossom? And he's like, oh, sorry, my bad. Don't think anything of it. Which I think is foreshadowing to something that gets revealed at the end of this episode, but it doesn't make any sense. Spoiler alert, the end of this episode doesn't make any sense. So, I just thought it was weird because he's like, oh, yeah, we have your back if you ever have to fight these dudes. And then...
like back to back they say this, yeah.
Yeah, and then
yes,
those dudes show up and I don't see any Gilman fighting these ships.
Well, nope. They do mention that they mention that the other living fortresses are there, but they only mention it in passing.
You see right.
them. So yes, and so this is where we start to see a bunch of stuff that they've talked about beforehand. What happens is when the Armada gets here, Trin tells us to go run to our airship. She pulls out her flute, summons Ocean Horn, and then just kicks butt. Literally just hopping from battleship to battleship, shooting lasers at these things. And then also different color ocean horns, whatever. Like, I can't remember the name. Well, so Sea Lork and whatever the third one
is. I don't remember. Learn the third one's name.
Right.
I just love Sea Lork.
I thought those all just were like, those were just the human stuff. I did not take that as those belonged.
I just assumed races. We have the three good guy races. So
the humans are selfish with their military. Like they're,
oh yeah.
It seems weird to me that they would give them one of these things.
I just, you know what? Maybe
unless that's the trade off.
Maybe because I'm a nice guy, I just thought nice things about the world, and I didn't think about Archimedes being an awful, awful human being. So you know, yeah, you could be right on that one. I also think this kind of says that in the first game, our dad. His name being Dad, is descendant from Trin, then, and not our hero character. I mean, okay, well, he's descended from our hero character, too, but Trin is just, Trin's the link, because she's the pilot of Ocean Horn. So that's
you're getting way ahead of yourself.
That's crazy.
We get this whole scene, they kick butt, we are flying around, we're shooting stuff, we're doing dog fights, all these things.
I mean,
and then we just go and land on one of these for some reason.
On the Death Star, even.
Yeah.
The command ship.
Yeah, hop on the Death Star.
Why do we think that's a good idea?
It's the largest airship Mayfield's ever seen, and it's his only opportunity to end this once and for all. He's like, so let's go.
How does that turn out, though? Not well. We go through this whole thing. We are inside of their airship now. We're traveling through these halls, fighting enemies, all of that. Brian, I assume this is where you were chucking bombs at people.
This happened, I did a lot of that. But this isn't the most awesome, amazing bomb chuck. But yes, yeah, I definitely did totally mess some dudes up with bombs.
But really, like, this is just a long... this is just fighting. I don't believe there's any puzzles in this at all.
No.
We're just going down... I think there's a switch that you hit a couple places that opens a door somewhere, but those are not... That is not a puzzle. That is absolutely not a puzzle.
No.
We eventually get to an area where Mesmeroth is, and he's at the control panel for this giant airship. We get a bunch of sort of... more lore dump, but it's more about like his perspective of everything that's happening.
I do like that we get a lot of lore in this episode. I like how it's paced out. It's not just like one moment of here's everything. It's like kind of, okay, here's a little bit. And then like in a half an hour, you get like a little bit more. And they keep just kind of giving us little bits of it in kind of big chunks. But it's not like this huge thing that we've seen in other games or and other Zelda likes where the bad guy's like, now you learn everything at the last possible moment that we can teach you everything.
Yeah, it's pretty close. But he basically talks about how... Go ahead. What?
I was just going to say, I feel like this scene and the scene we're going to get later, and I think there's another scene in there, all feels like the end of Matrix 2, where...
in a sense, spread out. Yes.
Yeah.
Just spread out.
Yeah, literally, it's just it is paced better. They do give you like chunks, and then you go and you do some stuff and you read some lore, but it's just like they keep introducing concepts, like new things over and over. It's like this and this, and then this thing is actually this, and then oh, actually you're this, and oh, actually this person is this.
Yeah,
and it's just, I said it earlier, I was like, this is going to try and do some weird alien stuff that's way out of its league, and they're going to do it poorly, and...
So, here's the thing. It doesn't just do alien stuff. So, yes, we will get to alien stuff. We've been hinting at that. But Mesmeroth talks about, like, you blind fools do not know that there is another realm where the gods live beneath our own realm, and that is what I am aiming for here. And he keeps, like, sarcastically being like, what you call my dark army, we're actually just trying to stop all... And it is very much still going in that, you don't understand, I'm not evil here. I'm trying to stop what, like, I'm trying to prevent actual catastrophe.
Right, and I think that he's right. Archimedes is... in over his head and doesn't really realize what he's doing.
Hashtag Archimedes was right.
but then he is also way in over his head and doesn't realize it. Like, and so this other realm, like Mayfair brings up, that the caster gun, like we know a little bit about it enough to utilize it in these ways, and Archimedes is like trying to keep going with it, and Mesmeroth does not want him to. He's like, hey dude, who cares, we've got this dome over us, we're safe here, let's just live here, we have all that we need here. I'm going to destroy all of it because Archimedes wants more.
He also, we talk a bit more, I think this was hinted at before, where Mesmeroth, well, maybe not this directly, Mesmeroth made Jen.
BC brought this up, that Jen has a soul living inside of him.
Yes, and apparently Mesmeroth was the one responsible for that process.
For Sir Corbin. Sir Corbin, oh yeah, go ahead.
And like... I don't know if I ever mentioned it, but it's like we fight Jin in the first game, and now this is the moment where, like,
oh yeah, that's right,
Jin transforms into the Dark Apostle that we fought in the first game.
Wait, because I think I sort of brought it up in the first episode that we see that the Jin robot looks exactly like the guy that we fight in the beginning of the towards the beginning of Oceanhorn 1.
Oh,
but then the fact that he became Robot Daddy was like, oh, okay, we're fine. I'm just completely forgot about it. Yeah, you're right. That's true.
I thought maybe it was going to be like, there's a bunch of robots like Jin, since there's this giant robot army, and he's just one of a model that ends up being, that we end up fighting. But no, it's specifically Jin. So,
yeah.
You know, maybe y'all just shrug this off. That's pretty cool. I think so. I didn't even realize it. Like, that's actually, I think that's pretty cool.
I mean, it's pretty cool, but it's like, it's still that kind of George Lucas, it's so they rhyme sort of crap. We're like, what?
We're gonna get some more George Lucas stuff.
Yes.
In a bit.
Well, we already got the Death Star and the Ocean Destroyers, but it's like they're pulling things from the first game to like plant into the second game, which, you know, it's cool.
Yeah, I mean, being a prequel, and then, it's just an exercise in dramatic irony because you know everybody loses at the end of Ocean Horn,
right?
Pretty much.
So,
well, I mean, you say lose, like winning is dying of old age as opposed to losing is dying younger, right? Like that's when you're talking about like time, that's really what you're fighting against.
Civilization loses here.
Then what old Mezzi does a spell that turns Jin back to like him for him, like his own servant. And there's just nothing that they can do about it. Like he just flips a switch. Suddenly, Jin is no longer the Jin that we know.
Yeah, he says it was wrong for me to imprison Sir Corbin's soul in Jin. So that makes it seem like he just kind of released his soul, and all that's left is a robot that blindly follows Mesmeroth.
Yeah, and then after this, they just sort of are like, all right, peace. And they just sort of get out of here. They're like, we've got stuff to do. We have to stop the Grand Corps from being finished. That's the whole reason we're here. Why we stopped by this place, I don't know. We're supposed to go to the White City. Apparently we took a detour.
Well, yeah, Oceanhorn had this on lock, man. We could have just left them alone.
Well, I mean, because like Uthaka is like literally in between the Dark Army headquarters and the White City. Since it's smack dab in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah,
like the White City's is up it, in the northwest, and then they're down in like the southeast. So they were just flying by, like they weren't even.
Okay.
Yeah.
I take back what I said. So we escape out of here. We get on our plane. We fly off, and this is where we get this really weird scene where we go back to where Mezzi's throne room is.
Yeah,
and he's sitting there.
He's nursing his wounds,
and then an Enderman from Minecraft shows up.
Yeah,
and is basically saying like, it kind of reminded me in the Elder Scrolls games when you kill someone like inappropriately for the first time, and then someone from like the Dark Hand or whatever it was called appears and are just like, "I know what you've done." This thing shows up and is just sort of like, okay, you've done enough. Would you like some dark power stuff now? And he's just like, finally, I've been trying to reach you guys for ages.
Yeah, he's like, you lost, your crap's destroyed, but here, this'll help you.
So my interpretation of that was whatever resides within the mask.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, because this thing like gives him a spell called Tryloth, where we had Tryloth in the first game. So maybe the Tryloth lives in his little special mask.
I think it's just connected. I think we're going to see something that it's all just part of an ancient sort of thing. The mask has something to do with that. The mask is a tool used to activate these things.
It's the dark side.
Yeah, I don't like this creature that showed up. I'm guessing, you know, it's probably an old alien or something, right? Like it's something like that
sure.
We're gonna get from the other realm or whatever. But we get back, and actually, I do take it back what I said before because we do get the area open up to us now. We're told to go to the White City. But where we end up is in that big open field area. We can go and do some things. Did you guys go into the graveyard?
Yes, absolutely.
No, I did not. Oh, because, Mesmeroth mentions that, like, go here. go to where Sir Corbin's buried or something.
Yes.
And now we have Robot Daddy is no more, so Flesh Daddy picks up his sword, and now he's
I don't
our
like Flesh Daddy. I'm putting guy. That down now. I don't like that.
I'm sorry. It's just, you know, that's just the way it is in Oceanhorn, man. So he's got his battle oar now, and he will be our companion. Which, for a second there, we lost Trin as a companion, and we had Robot Daddy and Flesh Daddy as our backup. And I was like, no! This is all I wanted. This is all I wanted. I wanted no Trin and our two dads hanging out with us. So that would have been preferable.
Well, Brian, you're missing out since you didn't go to the graveyard.
Okay, yeah, let me know.
There's another optional dungeon.
Okay.
With the reward being the Cosmic Blade.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And I haven't got a chance to test it too much because I'll, you know, spoiler alert on the, for, you know, in another 10 minutes, we will have our weapons taken from us.
Yeah.
And that includes this sword. But apparently, you know, I'm guessing it doesn't specifically say. I just want in video games when it says you found the special sword, it does 2.75 damage or something like that.
Yeah. I I don't know. I was doing pretty well on killing things beforehand, so I was like, a new sword is nice, but I don't know if I'm just killing things or if the new sword is good.
It'd be nice if it even had some kind of special thing that it did, right? Like Zelda's, you slash with it and it shoots something out, right? Like a full health. Just copy that. Why didn't you copy that?
Yeah. It makes some big thing about unlocking its true power, so maybe it'll be used in a plot point later. But I don't know.
Man, it's gonna... I hope that it is not like some post-game stuff, you know? Like, you can't even get until the game ends and all it does is power up a sword that you don't even need anymore because you've beaten the game.
Yeah.
Can you equip shards to this?
Yeah, it just copies whatever you had on your sword previously.
Oh, okay. Because
yeah.
I've got the other sword at 4 out of 5 stars would recommend sort of thing. So I'm doing okay on my sword.
The things you have to do to get to this, to get to the sword, are kind of insufferable. You have to do a trial for each of Sir Corbin's ancestors or knightly ancestors.
Okay.
I'm trying to think. Like, most of them aren't worth mentioning. There's
the shooting one I was so annoyed with.
The shooting one's a nightmare, and that took me the longest, and I stopped and did something else, and I came back and did it on the first try.
Same.
And then there's also a kind of annoying, kind of cool platforming section where you have to grab one of those golden orbs and bring it to a platform, but there's these rotating, like, tunnels that are covered in spikes, so you have to just kind of, like, navigate these spiked tunnels as it rotates around you.
I think this felt a lot like Breath of the Wild's what do they call
Divine Beasts?
Shrines?
The shrines.
Oh, the shrines.
I think it felt a lot like a shrine, like doing like 3 different shrines basically, where especially that rotating one felt like something you would see in a Zelda game where you had to carry a thing through all of that, specifically a Breath of the Wild thing.
Another thing is I learned that you can only swim in certain water, and if you, the way that you know that you're in water that you can't swim in is that it unequips your diving helmet and you drown.
What?
It unequips it when?
So,
as soon as you hit the water?
Yeah, so it started because I was, like, walking around the overworld map, and I was trying to, like, walk across a river or a lake or something swim across a river instead of
right.
going across a bridge because it was
yeah.
a more direct path. And it wouldn't let me, like, I was halfway through swimming, and it wouldn't let me equip my helmet, and it said, this isn't a great place for diving. So I was like, okay. I drowned, and then so...
How about breathing? Is it a good place for breathing, Oceanhorn 2, Knights of the Lost Realm?
And then so I was like, okay, well, I'll just equip my diving helmet before I get in the water, because, like, at least then I can swim across. Nope.
Right.
As soon as you touch the water, it unequips your diving helmet.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do not like. So let's go ahead and get back to our main goal here. We are told that the last thing that we need to do is we got to take the last emblem and take it to Source, is how they call it.
Yes.
It is the last town. I mean, I guess it's for the humans. It's the place for the humans.
Mm-hmm. It's where, like, the really frou-frou smart humans live.
It's what, yeah, all the high philosophers.
Yeah, the elite humans, they live up there.
I did take this time, as we're exploring, to go check out the south area, just to see, like, okay, there's an area that's covered in clouds that we haven't seen yet. So I flew out to there, and there is a landing spot in this, like, desert area. But if you keep going to the end, you can fight a bunch of monsters. There's a few centipedes over there, Brian.
Oh, fun.
And eventually you just find a locked door. We will find out that this is actually where we're going to go through a different route in a little bit. We'll get to there.
Did you fight a bunch of monsters as in, like, just the regular creatures that we fought before? Okay.
Yes.
So we haven't, there are, like, no dire folk to be seen at all in this game.
Nope. I'm gonna guess it's going to be, like, the thing we get at the very end.
Yeah. I have a different guess for that, but yeah. So I was running around this section to get to Source, and I came across one of those launch pads, and I was like, "All right, why don't we check out Yellowbird here, and maybe I'll hop in for a little bit and fly around and just come back." Game crashed as Yellowbird was trying to land. So.
Oh, that sucks. I've been fortunate. I haven't had any issues pop up like that.
Is the second time my game's crashed in Oceanhorn 2.
Oh, yeah, we haven't talked about that. Huh.
I had one other crash. I think it was going into the dungeon where we get the grappling hook. And then my game crashed when I opened the source gate. So I put the key in the source gate, and I waited. And I waited, and I waited, and then I just had to reset the game entirely.
Yeah.
So maybe it's that OLED life. I don't get those crashes in Oceanhorn. It says it on the back of the box. It says, will not crash Oceanhorn.
There's no performance. We all know there's no performance benefit to the OLED one.
Yeah, I don't know that.
It's like a Switch semi-pro.
So, yeah, we go through the cold winter area. Open up a door, and that takes us into the source area.
Oh,
they talk about what?
Yeah. No. I found the teleport spot in here, the little fast warp point. And I decided let's see how far it takes for me to hit the wall in this void of an area. About 7 minutes later, I gave up. At some point. The section where all the doors are, if you look on the map, you'll just immediately be off the map as soon as you get past the last door. The map only shows the 7 or 8 doors that are there.
I like the idea that your little arrow that shows you on there is on a different part of the UI.
Yeah.
Like, if you toggle over, you can see yourself, like, walking over where you're the weapons
over in
are.
The, you're over in the settings.
Yeah.
Eventually, the entire section of, because the further you get from the doors themselves, it there's, like, kind of a fog around them, and that just kept getting smaller and smaller and smaller until it disappeared, and at which point I was probably on a treadmill, which is what Tiffy's guess was too. But I don't think you can actually hit the end of it. It's you're just basically in the Animus, you know, at that point.
That's as scary as deep water to me, honestly.
Yeah,
it is.
I mean, when you're in the hyperbolic time chamber and it just never ends, and you can't find your way back to the food and the bed area.
So we're in Source area. This is a frozen town that is just empty, with a select few quote unquote statues.
These are not living statues.
Yeah, what's that name of the volcano?
Vesuvius.
Ah.
Yeah, this is some Mount Vesuvius kind of thing. It feels like we do hear Mayfair talks about like what happened here, and he's like, "Do I need to say it? Like, it was us getting their emblem. Like, it was us coming here to try to get the soul emblem." And it's like, oh, there was some other, they did not cooperate clearly.
I missed that.
Yeah.
Yeah. They bring that up where it's just like, how does that not stop us dead in our tracks to be like, hey guys, I think we're the bad guys here.
Yeah. I mean, I already knew that, but yeah.
This town, like there's a bunch of empty houses. There's almost nothing in any of them. I think one has a treasure chest. One has a bloodstone in it. You can get into some of them through the chimney, but one of them literally, it's like you get in there, there's nothing in it. And it's just like, why are you even letting me do this?
Mm-hmm.
Did either of you find the last, bounty?
No, I read the board, but I haven't found them yet.
Yeah. I just figured, we were wrong about all of the bounties and, and I just let them be. It's, you know, it's like a Cowboy Bebop episode. You find out the pathos behind your bounty and go, oh, okay, you're not so bad. So I've left all of them alone. I don't feel like capturing them.
Yeah, I went back and got caught up and did the four that Jeremy mentioned, and I think this is the last one, presumably their boss, but I couldn't find them at all. So.
Oh.
Yeah, I didn't see anything that would lead me towards it. I'm guessing we're gonna have an opportunity, whether it be after we finish quote unquote the game, quote unquote finish the game, or something, that we'll be able to come back to this area, because we are cut short on exploring this area to a certain point. We'll get to some place and then we just sort of get taken out of here involuntarily. There is one of the houses has a bunch of books in there. There's also a note to Archimedes, and there's like a love letter it's a note to Archimedes from like his teacher or something like that, mentioning about how he doesn't quite understand the stuff that they're talking about in terms of like describing the fragility of our world and how it's kept together through the different realms and all of this stuff.
And the arc of existence.
Specifically, he says that Archimedes doesn't understand like the flow of time and Kronos's plan.
Mm-hmm. Because Kronos is a god that is outside of time, and we have free will up until the point where Kronos takes away free will for certain things. We have the free will to reach the certain points of the arc that Kronos has. It's stupid.
It is. Okay. So the thing, I don't think it's stupid. I think philosophically it is kind of half-assed in a way.
Yeah.
And they are just sort of copying
philosophy. Yeah.
It's it's like half religious, half sort of a more open-minded narrative of that. Like, you know, if you want to argue what free will is, if free will is actually free will, and you know, a lot of religious groups will just say, yes, you have free will and everything, but this sort of takes that to just be like, sure, you can until time's up, and then the gods decide that they're going
to
interfere and do what they want
to
do.
Yeah, we don't need to get into like essentialism and stuff. I'm sorry, but yeah, I know what you're saying. It's ham-fisted, and I don't like it, and I don't think it works.
So what we really need to do is we got to find a key to open a door, because it's a video game. Mm-hmm. Ignoring all of this discussion that we've had, we're playing an action adventure game, so we need keys to open doors.
Mm-hmm.
You find a note where someone says that they left it in the well house, and the well house is a house where like the only way you can get into there is by going underneath the area. There's a lake that you can go down into. There is a bloodstone near the waterfall where the lake is. I don't know. Do you guys even care about bloodstones?
I've got like 30 or 30 something of them.
I'm at 27, so I'm halfway, and okay. I decided that 27 is probably enough.
It's a good number.
It's So we haven't gotten anything. So again, spoiler for the end of this episode, which we're coming up on, we're not going to get some new item. We still have an open slot. I don't know what that's going to be, but I miss in the first game had a thing of saying there's a bloodstone nearby and there was something that told you that. We don't have that in this. The bloodstones make a noise, but it's not loud enough.
Right. I'm guessing the Shield of Kronos will be our other thing, but that would replace our old shield, I would assume. So I thought we would find that because we use that to beat up.
I was kind of assuming the last thing would be whatever you get from all the blood shards.
So they say it's a spell, so I figured that would just be part of our gun.
Maybe. I don't know.
I stumbled into this house. I did not see the note that says it was in a well house. I just
found it.
No, it's outside. It's in front of the gate.
Yeah, it is. It's on the other side of the key. There's like two little pillars by the staircase.
So we go in and unlock that, and that takes us to the High Philosopher Chamber. And this is where it's basically their library. We get a scene where they're talking about like, oh, there's all these books here. And then Trin comes across a love letter from Archimedes to Calliope,
mm-hmm.
is how you would pronounce that name. But of course, old dad screws that up.
If you're Mayfar.
Yeah. And he's saying Calliope. All this stuff, but he says Calliope.
He also says Gen. Like,
does he say Gen?
He says Gen, not Gen.
Are we being pranked?
No, I'm convinced that they sent scripts to the voice actors and said, just send it back whenever you're done. We'll find the best. Do like two or three reads of everything, and we'll take the best ones.
Probably. It was just what was cheaper for them. Mm-hmm. So I want to run through a lot of this stuff because we've got a lot of things here that are thrown onto us and that aren't really, as far as I can tell, that important. This love letter talks about Archimedes telling Calliope she's cheating on her husband. Like at this time they were talking about she was with someone else. I believe they said that she was married at that time.
To the high philosopher.
And
To
another high philosopher,
like the big boy, right? Or
yeah, high philosopher.
That's basically it. I do like that.
He's
that
a winner.
She does call, yeah. Well, she calls him Ark, which I was like, that's a cool nickname. I'd like that nickname, Ark. That's a pretty cool one. That's what I took from all of that because no one else reacts to that. It's not like even Trin has this reaction of being like, oh, I didn't realize, or
not
anything
at
like
all.
That.
Not at all.
She has the same reaction I did. She was like, Ark, that's what she used to call him. She says.
I'm just sitting there going like, you didn't, nothing? You got nothing for your grandpa, you know? No? Okay, cool. Then we're just going to, let's move on, I guess.
Yeah, so after all of that, we leave here, but we have to climb through a window. And then old dad is like, I'm not climbing through no stupid window. Figure out some other way for me to get there. And we climb out through there, and then we get another scene. Not really immediately, but we're just in an area where it's fenced off, and there's nothing for us to do but to walk up to these giant stones with these carvings on it that have a really cool font to them. It is English. That is the key thing that I took away from this is that at the bottom of each of these, they say exile, rebirth, and what is it? Return.
One of them is covered, or I thought.
No, they all say that they all, they're very clear. Trin makes a point to say that Ark has one of these back at his lab.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I saw it on the way out.
So she's familiar with that.
Yeah. Because you can read, there are signs on the inn that I've, and the shop, its shop looks like with a U sort of, but I've been calling it the shop. Yeah. But the ship. You can sort of read these signs throughout the game.
But it all has alien spaceships on it.
Mm-hmm.
This is a key thing to pay attention to here.
Yeah.
Trin says some things, but it's like not, she's just sort of like, oh, he was talking about some of these things. Are they coming back? And then suddenly old Mezzi's over here just being like, hey, I'm here too. Thanks for meeting me here. And then we see a bunch of his soldiers, like, you know, coming around the back to swarm us around. And this is where we get kidnapped.
Yay.
we get kidnapped, and then old dad shows up and is just like, what happened? You guys hiding somewhere? What's going on? This is where some framing stuff was weird for me, because we get this shot of both ourselves and Trent are in two different cells, but we share a wall, right? Mm-hmm. We're both she's sitting with her back against the wall talking to us. It's that, you know,
Cowboy Bebop the movie. Yeah.
Okay. And she's talking about like all of these things about like, oh, isn't this was funny, because we got a couple options to how to respond, and I picked sarcastic ones for both of them, where she talks about like, oh, it's so important that we embrace nature and we've been ruining it with our machines. And I selected the thing that was just like, well, machines are cool too. And she's like, I'm being serious right now.
No, anytime they give us two options, when this happens, you know, multiple times throughout the game, when you're talking to Trent, they never give me the option I want. They never give me the like, no, you're wrong. Like, you're absolutely wrong. And I, you don't know, like, you're out of touch and you don't know what you're talking about kind of things. It's always like, do you want to agree with her or agree with her sarcastically or something? You know,
I mean, that's Zelda, man. That is Zelda.
I know. Just don't do it.
She then says something along the lines of, if all this didn't happen, do you think we would be together? And the option was just like, yeah, I think so. Or I don't know, or something like that. And I was just like, I don't know. I don't have time for this.
Yeah,
and then
immediately
what the sequence of events for me was, she asked me that question. I was just like, I don't know. There's too many things going on. And then it says, you leveled up. I'm like, I picked the right answer. All right. now we have to escape from this prison that we are in. We conveniently have barrels and fire next to us, where there is a wooden plank in front of a passage. Mm-hmm. So even if, like, you could just chuck stuff around and then accidentally set everything on fire. Because that's what I did.
Well, all you gotta do is pick up a flaming barrel, like I mentioned very early on in the season, where if you spin around in a circle, it restarts the fire animation, which shoots fire out in all directions, because like the first few frames of the fire animation is like a 5-foot arc of fire shooting out from your barrel. So yeah, nice. Got to do that fun thing again.
But in this, we start to piece back together our gear. We don't have anything, and it's weird on the UI, because it'll still show the elements to our gun, but we don't have our gun.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing we get back is our shield after we escape from there. I love how useless these spider bots are, too. They're just so slow. Like, they just sort of wander around, and you can just, like, easily avoid all of them.
They don't even, like, signal that something's going wrong or anything like that. They just kind of...
No.
They're there to hurt you.
I had to kill the first two, and, like, the that you see... and the reason is, there's a treasure chest in another one of the cells that I didn't get initially. The first spider bot fell into the opening. So he was stuck on top of the opening into the area you need to crawl through.
Fun.
And then you had to throw barrels at him, but barrels will break eventually. And then I aggroed the second spider bot. So I got the second spider bot caught on the first spider bot, who was caught in a hole, and then just chucked barrels at him.
I didn't do this, but I just thought of it now that you could have done the parry block if you like just needed to knock them over and stun them to get past them. It didn't work.
It just, the parry system sucks. There's just a delay.
Oh, it does suck.
There is lag between you hitting your shield and him bringing up in time.
Yeah.
It is not tight enough. This isn't a Devil May Cry. This isn't a Bayonetta. This isn't any of those action games like that. And so we get our shield. We'll eventually find some boulders that we can push around on them, which is just slow and stupid, but in a way that I like.
I just left and came back.
Well, I was just like circling around this boulder while they'd like chase me around, and then I'm like kind of pushing it on them, just like, get away from me.
No, I just left and came back and got the treasure chest and bloodstone or whatever was hiding around here.
We also eventually get Trin's glaive, which you can use as a sword. So you can throw it like a boomerang, and you can use it as a sword. So we have a sword, and we have a shield, and we have a ranged attack now. We don't have all the things that we had before, but we have enough to get by at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as we keep going, we then get a cutscene that is very Star Wars to me. This was very much Princess Leia being tortured for information. That's what it felt like to me, at least, mm-hmm. because the scene starts with just suddenly Trin is in a different location. Like, we left her just a couple minutes ago in that cell, and now she was put into this, like, Iron Maiden looking kind of cell thing with the spikes on the inside so she doesn't move, right? And then Mesmeroth comes in, and basically this is where, yeah, we're getting even more sort of Star Wars things here. I had said this before. Trin is kind of like our sister, in a way, because the Mesmeroth goes and describes that both her and our main character are from the alien race. What?
No, he doesn't even say that. He says, your spirits birthed through the beacons via orbs or something to that effect. It makes no sense.
So what I took from this as when we're in the beacons of the other races, they're like, hey, this is where our races were created initially. And so Mesmeroth and Archimedes, it sounds like they found this out independently of each other, decided to try to do that based on what they know. And so Mesmeroth seems to have made us. Archimedes also seems to have made her because...
So we're cousins. We're not brother and sister, but right. We're like cousins.
We're an experiment to see if any of that lore was true, and Calliope got a daughter out of it.
But you're also like, it's unclear because when Mesmeroth was talking about Jin previously, before he turned them back into the Dark Apostle, he was going on this whole tangent about how you can pull spirits from the other world through into this world and do blah, 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 blah. And then he's like, that's kind of like how I saw Jin die and I saw his spirit leaving his body. And that's why I was able to stuff it into the robot, because I was like right there mm-hmm. watching it happen. So it's like,
yeah,
not even that we're cousins. We're just like some spirits ripped from this other realm into an orb, into a human
yeah.
form.
But we are referred to as we are Awoken Ones. That was the name that they used for both our main character and Trin.
Yeah.
That we mm-hmm. are both from this and we are special in that way.
Yeah.
It isn't just that this is where all of them came from and we happen to be with that. We are different from the other humans here. And it's something that is special between the two of us.
Mm-hmm. We're both Anakin.
You know, there. So I am torn on this where... A lot of this kind of high-minded lore was in the original Oceanhorn, but it was all in books. Like, you had, like, there was a point that you get to the one floating island thing, and there's a library there, and you could read a bunch of stuff about the war and about that, and you talked about, like, there was time travel in there, but that was not a part of the actual game. That was just a little thing that fattened it up around the sides. I like that they are making a point to be like, this is going to be part of the game this time, but it's still just like, man, you have so much going on right here, and it doesn't change the fact that this cutscene is going to be over, and I'm going to go and push buttons and collect keys and open doors.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't really change what's happening here. I'm still going to be doing the same kind of stuff.
I think, cool that they tried to address it, but they're doing way too much, and I think the whole thing about the prequel is it's turning the original on its head, where Mesmeroth was just this random evil dude who showed up. And it's like, no, there's more going on, and Archimedes and the Grand Corps were maybe a bad thing to begin with. And I think that's like the interesting story point. All the stuff about aliens and ghosts and orbs is just extra.
It's too much.
And like, if they were going to do that well, great. But they're not going to do it well, and they're not going to do it justice. And it's not really adding much, I feel.
All it adds is that Archimedes is in over his head, and we need something. Mesmeroth can't stop him with what he has, so he needs to find something strong to help him, which also puts him in over his head. But then they feel the need to like really define down what it is that is outside that Mesmeroth is pulling from, that everyone's pulling from, I guess. But yeah, it's I think they go like a little too many layers deep with setting up the world. I don't know.
But after all of this stuff, he explains that and is just trying to be like, look, I'm just telling you, your grandpa's a bad guy, okay? Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to go and summon the giant orb. and he comes out here to go and ponder his orb. He summons Tryloth, which is this giant sphere, and it's a weird looking cutscene because he's just like standing there and this thing is coming out of the sand. And then after that cutscene, we are walking on this bridge area with that behind us.
Yeah.
Like it's the blood moon or something like that, right? But this is where we're going to wrap up the episode. We got out of prison. We saw some things. The next episode, we're going to be beating the game. Probably. Yes. In the next episode, we're going to be beating this game.
I certainly hope so. I don't know how much... Not that like I'm sick of playing this game, but like... How much more crap could they be like hiding from us? That's all.
Jeremy and I did discuss that there's a underwater. We haven't been to the Human Beacon for one.
Mm-hmm.
There is an entire underwater dungeon that we have not gone to.
We don't know if it's a dungeon.
There's an underwater. There is shrine a there. That could be a dungeon on a secret island that we have not gone to.
Even if it's a dungeon, the dungeons are not very long.
No, but I want more.
Sure.
We'll talk. Well, I'll talk about this at the end of the thing, whatever.
Sure.
So go ahead, do that. Beat the game, roll credits, find some things. Maybe if you want to collect all the bloodstones, go and do that. I might try. It depends on how much of a task that's going to be. I'll let you know maybe what that, either way, I'll figure out what it is that we get from there, but do that. Find all that stuff. Have some fun. Meet back here. And we'll talk about it on Chat of the Wild.
Guidance.